Yeah. Thank you, Mac Davis. Some of you remember that from the back in the 60s, Mac Davis, crossover country guy. Being humble. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, right? I mean, we're all perfect in every way, so how can we be humble? How could we be humble when we're all perfect exactly the way we are? But that's what is our opportunity, to be humble, to be humble. And now, being humble, I just want to make sure, you know, being humble is making some differentiation. It's not like being sheepish, right? It's not being sheepish or meek or mild or whatever. You know, it's humble. And it reminds me of the fellow who, you know, needed open heart surgery or needed a heart replacement, you know, and the doctor came to him and said, you know, we don't have a suitable donor, but we do have a sheep heart that'll work. And he said, well, you know, okay, you know, for now, and then we can find something else later, right? And he said, yeah. So he has the operations. He wakes up the next day, and the doctor asks him how he feels, and he says, not bad. That was a bad joke, wasn't it? Okay. Yeah, I got to have bad jokes every once in a while. Being humble. This has got to do with our Beatitudes. Remember the last time I was here, I talked about being, on being, and introduced these Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes, if you remember, are the first 8 statements in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5. It's actually 5, 3 through 10 that opens up the Sermon on the Mount, which is chapters 5, 6, and 7. Right? And that the Beatitudes are 8 statements of being. They start with the words beati, which is Latin for blessed or open, or humble is another way of understanding. Blessed being happy. It's another way, what's his name? Robert Schuller wrote a book called The Be Happy Attitudes. And Emmett Fox and Eric Butterworth, a longtime Unity minister who wrote Discover the Power Within You, he talks a lot about the Beatitudes. And Emmett Fox, who wrote the Sermon on the Mount, and a few other folks talk about these being attitudes of being. Attitudes of being. That there's an attitude, blessed are the poor in spirit is the one we're talking about today, or blessed are those who mourn, or blessed are those who hunger and thirst. You know, there's 8 different statements there. And that there is a promise that goes along with it. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's what we're talking about today. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So there's a promise. So we're going to talk about being poor in spirit, and we're going to talk about what heaven is. What's the promise? Is this something we really want to achieve? Good question, you know. It's like, I don't know. Being poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, Emmett Fox talks about being poor in spiritual pride. Being poor in spiritual pride. Remember, he's talking to the Jews. He's talking to the Jewish people. Now, we can relate today because we got a lot of people who think they know the answers, right? That somehow my particular religion or my political party or my group or my, you know, race or my whatever is better. That we have the answer. That we're the chosen people. And they literally thought of themselves as the chosen people. He was talking to the chosen people. And he's saying, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are you who do not have spiritual pride. And they're the people with spiritual pride. They're the people that think, well, we have the answer. We've got the only true God. Right? Our way or the highway. We are the highway. Everybody else is low way. Right? That's who he's talking to. He's saying, blessed are those who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. What is he? Blessed are those that are humble. Now you think about, I like and Emmett Fox talks about the rich young ruler who comes to Jesus and he says, what must I do to inherit the kingdom of heaven? And he says, well, sell all that you have, give it to the poor, and follow me. And what did he do? He skulked away because he had many possessions. He had many possessions. He couldn't sell. He was possessed by his possessions. He was possessed by his possessions. And I like to think of the where'd it go? I got myself off there. Being poor in spirit, to be humble, right? So we think of the eye of the needle. One of the things that Jesus says about the kingdom of heaven is he says it would be easier for a rich man, easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. So here we have this rich young ruler who couldn't get, who had, was possessed by his possessions, and then we have the story of, or the parable of a camel passing through the eye of a needle. And most people, you think, well, you know, if you knit or sew, you know what a needle is, and those eyes are pretty small. How could a camel, who stands up taller than we do, pass through this little eye of a needle? Well, as Rocco Errico and a few other Aramaic scholars will tell you, that the eye of the needle was one of the 12 gates into Jerusalem, into the old city of Jerusalem. There was four walls, and each of the walls had three gates, one for each tribe, you know, the 12 tribes of Israel. And one of those gates was called the Eye of the Needle. But it was small, and it was called that partly because to get through that gate, you had to take all the baggage, all the luggage, the saddles, everything off of a camel for it to pass through the Eye of the Needle. And then you would have to pack them back up on the other side. So most people came through a different gate, right? Because it was easier to go around than it was to go through. So Jesus was talking to people who knew what he was talking about. So it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man. Because the rich person, somebody who is possessed by their possessions, has a tough time letting go. And what are those possessions? It's not just stuff and things, but ideas, beliefs, right? If we are sure that we are right, we're wrong. When I know that I'm right, that's when I'm wrong. I have to keep remembering that. How many times I thought I had the answer, I knew exactly what was right, you know, and I tell people, well, no, that can't be right, I know what's right. And then somewhere along the line, I find out, well, maybe I might have been mistaken. Yeah? So I've learned to say, instead of saying I'm right, I'm learning to say, well, you might be right. Yeah, you might be right. Instead of forcing my point of view. To be humble is to be teachable. To be teachable. Jesus, when he brings children to sit on his lap, and he says, unless you become like a little child, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. And then he goes on to talk about and being humble. To be humble like a little child. We often hear that first part about being like little children. We don't catch that part about being humble. But he's talking about our being humble, not humiliated. You know the difference between being humiliated and having humility, right? Being humiliated, we've probably sometimes, when we think we're right and we get proved we're wrong, we get a certain level of humiliation. What I like to say is, you know, humiliation is when we get knocked down off our pedestal. We put ourselves up on a pedestal, we say, I am right, I know what's going on, and then we find out that that's not right, and or that I'm, you know, the wise one, and we, you know, whatever it is. Now, humility is when we step down off the pedestal on our own, or even better yet, we don't get up on the pedestal at all. So being humble is not putting ourselves first, right? It's not thinking less of ourselves. Humility is not thinking less of ourselves, but thinking of ourselves less. Thinking of ourselves less. And it's teachability. It's teachability. Are we learning? Mother Teresa, beautiful quote. She says, listen, be teachable. If you are green, you can still grow. If you're green, you can still grow. When we are green, we can still grow. When we are teachable, when we are humble, when we don't think we know everything. And we open ourselves up to the new and the exciting and all the wonderful things that are available to us. I know as I get more experience, I don't talk about getting old, I talk about having more experience, right? I get a little bit set in my ways. I don't necessarily, you know, new things come along and, oh, I don't, you know. And I had a great day yesterday. My son was home. He's got spring break, but he's got to go back and finish a project. His birthday is Tuesday. So yesterday I got to spend the day with him. My wife, Kathy, wasn't feeling well. So she stayed home and with just me and my 23 going on 24-year-old son. You know, and it was great because, you know, we went out shopping and then we went to a movie and we had dinner. You know, it was like we were on a date. It was great, you know. Bought him a new shirt, you know, and we went to see, I don't know, whatever, Red Sparrow, which was okay, you know. Anyway, I'm not sure why I mentioned that, but I did. It's just one of those movies he kind of enjoyed. Anyway, to be humble, to be teachable, and not put ourselves up on that pedestal. That's one of those things that I learned back in ministerial program, back in seminary. I had an instructor by the name of Marvin Anderson. And I can remember he was talking about, you know what, every time I give a talk, somebody will come up to you and say, oh, how wonderful that was. And when they say that, what you got to be thinking in your mind is, cornflakes, cornflakes, thank you, cornflakes, right? Because the next person in line is going to tell you, you know, when you said such and such, I really don't believe, you know, you're really a lousy speaker. And when somebody says that to me, I go, thank you, cornflakes, cornflakes, right? Because I can't. It's easy to let people build up my ego, but then when I let my ego build up, you know, I get punctured real quick and get deflated, you know. And I've had times like that where it's up and down and up and down, and I get more of a, it's nice to have a more even roll, and it's a little higher than it was, a little higher than it was when I was dependent upon people affirming me. We don't have to be affirmed by others, to be teachable. To learn. And what is the kingdom of heaven? The other side of that, right? The kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven. We've talked a little bit about in unity, about we don't believe in heaven as being somewhere we go to after death, that Jesus didn't teach that. He talked about the kingdom of heaven is in your midst. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, right? The kingdom of heaven is a here and now experience. And that we don't know what happens for sure after we die. You know, it could be reincarnation. We come back and have another life experience, or we go off to another dimension of space and time, or we go off to another planet. Who knows for sure? All I know is what, all we, you know, in unity, we talk about what happens between birth and death. And we can have that opportunity. We have that opportunity to live in heaven right here and right now. That heaven is a state of consciousness. It's a conscious awareness of the presence of God. That's a simple definition, the conscious awareness of the presence of God, right? Any teaching will tell you that, you know, we're going to go off into God's presence after we die. Some of these Christian teachings, you know, if we go to heaven after we die, we'll be in God's presence, right? Well, we don't have to wait until after we die to be in God's presence, because wherever we are, God is. And the only thing separating us from God is our thoughts, our thinking, our conscious awareness of being. And so Jesus, or whoever wrote this particular, or formulated these ideas, they're put in the mouth of Jesus in this particular gospel, is telling us these attitudes of being that bring us into a conscious awareness of the presence of God. Being teachable, being open, being receptive, being humble, being lacking in self-pride. Pride is the number one of the seven deadly sins, which is formulated, was formulated about 400 years after the Bible, or Jesus lived. So I finally figured out somewhere along the line that it's not biblical. Anyway, I'm going off the pace there. Try to bring this home here. So these Beatitudes relate to the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount, so the Beatitudes are like index, if you will, table of contents for the Sermon on the Mount. The only thing is it's in reverse order, which is kind of funny how it works. So it goes through these eight Beatitudes, starting with, blessed are those who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And that relates to chapter 7, verses 15 through 23, where he talks about, be aware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You ever known any wolves in sheep's clothing? False prophets? You know, there's a lot of people, and I've experienced them in churches, who do a lot of good work. They do a lot of good things. And they're always really sure to make sure everybody knows that they've done some good stuff, right? It's the people behind the scenes who are making things happen, who get, you know, of course we try to single them out every once in a while and make sure that we know, that they know, that we appreciate their efforts. But it's the ones that are constantly leading the charge and getting things going and then lets everybody else do it while they take the credit. Those are the false prophets and the ravenous wolves in sheep's clothing. You will know them by their fruits. And then he goes on and says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. And there's some that said, Lord, Lord, we prophesied in your name, and we cast out demons in your name, and did mighty works in your name. And he says, I did not know you. Depart from me, you evildoer. Do we know that Christ spirit within? Are we coming from love? Are we abiding in God, abiding in love? Well, as we do whatever it is what we do, then God knows us. But if we're coming from ego, of course, is edging God out, E-G-O, edging God out. We're coming from ego, and we're putting on this false front, this wolf's sheep's clothing of how wonderful I am. And inwardly are ravenous wolves, just desiring more and more attention and applause and kudos, etc. Then we are not going to be in a conscious awareness of God's presence or living in heaven. It's pretty simple, right? It's very practical advice that's being given us here when we strip the religiosity away and relate to it on a personal level. That when I am poor in pride, poor in spiritual pride, when I am humble, when I am open and receptive to what it is, when I am teachable, that is when I am living in a conscious awareness of the presence of God, of a greater reality, of an infinite presence and a power of love and light and peace that infills my soul with an awareness of all the good that God is. Right here and right now. And so if I'm not experiencing that consciousness, then I need to look at the other side of the equation, right? We have an equation happening here. When I am humble, when I'm open and receptive, that's when I experience. So if I'm not experiencing, then I need to look at, okay, how am I holding on to my own self-will? How am I manipulating? How am I trying to control other people? How is it that I am trying to make this something different than what it is? Our only job is just to be in the moment with what is, open and receptive to expressing God in whatever way we are called to express God in the moment. And as we express God and we're conscious of God's presence, that's heaven. It's heavenly, right? We've all experienced that. We've all been in situations, circumstances. We've all been in soup kitchens, or we've all been I like to donate my time with the Lighthouse. And when I'm in those situations, I'm talking with people and we're just enjoying being in that moment. And even the people who are receiving, you know, the gifts, and we're all kind of given to each other. Right? It's like the story of the fellow who died and God's showing him around and says, here's what heaven is, and in heaven here's what hell is. I have to start with the hell first. And he opens the door to this room, and there's this lavish table of all the good delicacies of the world. And all these people are sitting around miserable because they've got 3-foot-long spoons and forks, and they can't feed themselves, and they're all miserable. And then he opens the door, and this one's marked Tevin. And it's the same scene with a lavish table with all the goods and delicacies of the world. And the people had the same 3-foot spoons and forks, but they're feeding each other. And it's heaven. Right? That's our opportunity to live in heaven. To be poor in spirit. To live in heaven. I open my mind. I opened my heart, I opened my soul. There's a great song that was an alternative for today. A friend of mine, Michael Stillwater, it's taken from A Course in Miracles, and says, I opened my heart to love. Together? I opened my heart to love. I opened my mind to peace. Together? I opened my mind to peace. I opened my soul to joy. Together? I open my soul to joy. And then we take all three of those statements together. I open my heart to love. I open my mind to peace. I open my soul to joy. And so it is, and so it shall be. Thank you, God, and amen. Yea, God. Thank you all for being here.